This episode of AVXL is recorded on June 7th, 2018. We're going to talk about the new 2018 TVs. We've had more eyes on time. Sonos has a Beam soundbar. We got a new keyboard for your home theater PC. Amazon's got a new Fire TV. When do you need a preamp for your audio gear? And so much more.
Testing 1, 2, 3. All right. I'm not blowing anything out.
Ignorant weasels chewing on your soul. Ignorant weasels. Do you have speed?
Yeah.
Welcome to AVXL, your guide to the best in home audio and video gear, no matter what your budget is. I'm Patrick Norton.
I am Robert Herron.
And I said audio and video gear instead of video and audio gear. Weird.
Well, it's alphabetical.
It is alphabetical. Look at me.
There's an order to the madness.
My subconscious is alphabetizing things like I'm six. We talk about home theater. We talk about audio here. And whether you or we like it or not, voice control is slowly weaseling its way into your home theater and audio gear. It's certainly been around for a long time. Apple TV remote controls, Fire TV remote controls, Roku remote controls, various televisions. And I got to say, I like voice control better than some of the atrocious hand gesture things that people were like, just wave above your head to change the volume.
Oh, my goodness.
Which
I do not miss that.
Was both irritating and did not function well. But, well, in any case, I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm still Robert Herron, baby.
And this is an audio podcast that will eventually talk about, you know, home theater and audio. Are you excited about the Sonos Beam soundbar? Are you curious?
The announcement unveiled what they're calling their Beam soundbar, and it appears to be a smaller, more affordable version of the Playbar that's oh so popular.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's one thing about Sonos that I absolutely love is their sound quality.
Yes.
Their engineers do some of the best work in terms of creating a custom speaker design that just puts out delicious sounding tunes.
Well, it's a combination of the speaker, the DSP, the amplification, the way it works with the application on your phone.
The app is probably one of my absolute favorite mm-hmm. things. And for Apple owners or people who use iOS devices, you have an extra kick in terms of their mm-hmm. TruePlay technology that yeah. lets you do room audio correction. They should bring that software to Android, hint, hint, but that's a great way just to get a little extra something out of any of the speakers I've listened to from them in terms of just making it sound a little bit better in terms of where you place it in the room. And in the case of the Beam, we were just talking about voice control. This will be Sonos' second speaker that has Alexa built right in out of the box.
You were talking about audio quality. I was loaned. A friend of mine couldn't get his Devalier Spark to run, and it was amazing to me. You know, we talk about the application, but it's amazing how bad some of the software is to work with, you know, around the house.
Oh, really?
Audio gear. Yeah. I mean, I should say the Devalier Phantom, right? I think the current version sells for like, the entry level sells for like $1,700, something
okay.
ridiculous like that.
Good premium speaker.
It is one of, you know, I have questions. I have issues with the speaker itself. It's a fascinating piece of engineering. If you love the aesthetics, it's absolutely gorgeous. But these are incredibly expensive devices, and it has one of the worst applications I have ever used in audio.
And if that's a main part of the experience,
yeah.
then it really sinks me in terms of, you know, it may be a great speaker. But if literally it is designed to be used with this app, and mm-hmm. the app isn't all that great, that's where it suddenly becomes a lot less useful, or it's like, wow, I really didn't need anything like this then.
Yeah.
And in the case of Sonos, at least, it just covers the board in terms of like any particular streaming service you want to use. They probably support it right out of the mm-hmm. box. In terms of what is supported with Alexa built in, it's not nearly the list of apps right. that you can do directly within the Sonos app using your fingers to control it. However, for the popular apps like Spotify and, of course, Amazon's music services, in addition to Pandora and a few others, that is built right in, and you can control it with your voice, at least according to the demos we witnessed.
Yeah.
And it appeared to function pretty well. And most interesting thing maybe for a lot of people, in addition to it being more affordable, a smaller, more compact design, mm-hmm. say about 60% of the size of a Playbar, is that it has HDMI input. And that was the craziest part for me. Right. I was like, what?
I literally could not use a Sonos Play Bar in my house because I was running off of a projection screen. There was no way for me to take the audio output via like an optical or SPDIF connection because there was no optical or SPDIF connection to run off of it.
Most projectors have optical output.
Well, let me rephrase that. I could not, the cabling issues were problematic.
That is a fact. In the case of the Beam, though, they are supporting, if your TV has the audio return channel enabled HDMI port, in addition to the consumer electronic control, ARC and CEC, respectively.
Right.
Yeah, this introduces some interesting control possibilities in the sense that with that plugged in and running, you can use the Sonos Beam then to say, turn on my TV or turn off my TV or turn the volume up and down. And at least from the demos we've seen, it looked like it worked pretty solid. So that's not going to be for everyone. Maybe your TV is plumb out of HDMI ports, at least available ones, or your TV has a half-assed ARC or CEC implementation.
Right.
Then at least it comes with an adapter that converts that HDMI port to optical.
That's
so
good.
You can still do optical input with it. But I like the fact that it does have an HDMI port for CEC control. It doesn't require infrared, and it is directly sending the signals over the HDMI cable. So in a sense, that could work in your favor. It'd be less susceptible, I think, to interference and things like that.
It's one of the things that's nice, you mentioned the audio quality. I want to amplify that. I was talking about that Duvalier Phantom, right? The entry-level one is, 1,200 watts, which is a ridiculous spec, sells for just under $1,700. And it's a single point source of audio. And it's cool. And the engineering is fantastic. But for considerably less, you could get a couple of the Model 1, the Play 1s and a Sonos sub have almost the entire 16 hertz to 25 kilohertz range of that Phantom, have stereo audio, and have a better experience as far as I'm concerned, and have an application that doesn't suck. And I bring all of that up because, the Beam soundbar is probably good down to like 35, 40 hertz. But you are going to want to purchase, if you want a full-on raging, I am watching an action movie and I want to feel, Black Panther or Thanos or Iron Man or Star Wars or anything else deep in the pit of my stomach, with every thud and shot and crash, you are going to want to pick up a Sonos sub to go along with that. And then that's a $699 purchase. The upside is it'll work along with all of the devices in your house, all the Sonos devices in your house, and that Beam soundbar is $300 less than the Play Bar. So you're talking about $1,100 instead of $1,400 to get a really badass home theater experience. Although for a full badass home theater experience, you're also going to want a couple of Play Ones in the back corners of the room if you want a 5.1 surround sound experience.
In terms of what they have built into it, you could use the Beam as, say, your front three channels. It has a centered tweeter in addition to, where are the drivers? Let's see here. How many drivers? Four full range, what they're calling woofers, but, that's more or less your full range speakers. They do a lot with small things. Three passive radiators and that single centered tweeter. Mm-hmm. And a 5-array microphone. Looks like July 17th will be the release date. Oh, so we got a little over a month. Okay. I think in terms of setup, it's a soundbar as well, and a more compact design, available in two colors. So I
black
think this
and
is,
white.
Yes. So, I would say from the design, the one thing I noticed is that it has this cool fabric that's wrapped 360 around it. That likely requires a custom bracket then if you planned on mounting this or wall mounting it or attaching it to your TV directly. So you're not using standard mounting hardware with that. That's that minor complaint. But otherwise, I'm looking forward to it. And I'll be curious to see what they can do with the CEC control and how well it plays out across different manufacturers. I'm glad they put the adapter for HDMI to optical, because as more of a value-oriented sub or a soundbar, and we're talking $399, mm-hmm. it's about $300 less than the Play Bar. It's not super value. It's going to have terrific sound, and it's all about the ease of setup. And I think they're hitting all the right points, and I can't wait to get one in hand and actually test it out. Also, too, Sonos is not looking to just be Alexa only. They want to be AI agnostic, at least according to their presentations. So they have Google Assistant coming. They say soon. I'm not sure how soon that really means, but as soon as they can. So if you are in the world of not Alexa, but say instead Google's assistant, either for the Chromecast or for their home devices, there you go. Hopefully that will be coming with a relative quickness.
Somebody just realized, so you can set it on furniture. The wall mount is sold separately. It's $59.
Okay.
They do have a pretty slick...
Not everybody mounts their sound bars, but lately I've been doing that a lot.
Yeah.
So...
Well, you conveniently have a sort of a credenza kind of thing in front of the television you have.
In this room, yeah. But I just helped a buddy do a 65-inch TV install, and he had a nice sound bar to go with it above the fireplace, and we ended up mounting that sucker right on the TV itself. It's nice for wall-mounted TVs or TVs mounted on articulating arms in particular to have that sound bar mounted directly to it. So it's just pointing in a consistent direction relative to where the picture is pointing. So
I got to say... I just realized as I was looking up
Oh, and you mentioned Quick too. You could add a Sonos sub to this. Yeah.
They have a deal on that. They knock $100 off the price if you buy the Beam and the subwoofer. It costs $999 instead of $1,100.
And you, with the latest software updates I've seen, it appears that you could not only link a sub but two of the Play Ones, and create a full 5-1 setup. So that's good to go. One thing I saw mentioned was that Dolby Atmos isn't supported.
Right.
Okay. I've heard some good demonstration material of Dolby Atmos soundbars that sounded good with the demo material.
Yeah.
But when it came to actual Dolby Atmos titles, you know, it was okay. It didn't sound bad, but it wasn't like a ceiling setup where you had the drivers, two to four drivers in the ceiling downward for those height channels in a Dolby Home theater setup with discrete speakers. And
I got to say, I'm curious.
I don't know. It's just not a huge deal for me.
Yeah. So. And Atmos, there's just not a ton of Atmos content out right now.
True.
I mean, it's crazy when you...
But if you're an Xbox gamer, there are a few titles out there now. Goodness.
When you have Atmos, I mean, when you have a title that really takes advantage of Atmos, it is a phenomenal experience if it is properly implemented.
And increasingly, I'm finding... The conversion process where it can take, like, say, Dolby 5.1 and give it an Atmos flavor through an AVR's processor. Mm-hmm. That also, it's nice just to fully take advantage of all the speakers you spent money on in a more fully fleshed out home theater setup. But as far as Sonos goes with their Beam soundbar, I'm looking forward to it. And I guess we got over a month and a week to wait just to actually get one in hand here.
We should talk to Vizio because they've got, you know, it's crazy. When you look at Vizio, Vizio makes great soundbars, and they also do soundbars with discrete subwoofers. The subwoofers are not particularly outrageous. I want to say they go down to like 35 hertz.
No, but I hooked my mom up with their 38-inch soundbar on a 60-inch TV, and it came with the wireless sub. I always noticed when that sub was not turned on or somebody unplugged it. And I was quick to walk back over and make sure that was turned back on and linked up. It makes a difference.
It does make a difference. And it's amazing how much of a difference it makes on music and soundtracks. Because when you have that sub, even if it doesn't go down to 20 hertz, the mythical, the awesome, the 20 hertz that we all know and love and desperately need in the middle of the night, it's amazing how much difference a subwoofer can make, like in that area between 80 and 30 hertz. Because those are all things where you need to move a lot of air to have impact.
My last experience with Sonos was with their Playbase, and that I felt as a TV speaker, it didn't absolutely require a sub.
Right.
It sounded pretty good without one, although always, if you can put a sub into the mix, you're going to get a richer, more fleshed out experience. Yeah. I think just a better home theater experience, just be able to have a dedicated speaker for those lower frequencies.
Yeah, and you know, shop carefully because you know the difference between, for example, last year's Vizio, their 36-inch 2.1 soundbar and sub, that goes down to 50 hertz. That's $150. By the time you spend $500, you're getting down to 30 hertz, and you've got two discrete rear channels. And it's tough. You know, if you can ever get, you know, discrete rear channels is always a plus, so you have full 5.1 surround sound. And just keep an eyeball on the specs, because just because it has a subwoofer doesn't mean it's going down particularly low.
Oh, one more thing for the Beam, too. They did show a demonstration using something like a Fire TV stick, where at least with Amazon's own content, it was really easy just to say out loud, hey, play this particular thing. And it handled it pretty well. I'll be curious to see how that handles non-Amazon blessed services. However, at least, you know, as far as getting it out the door, having Alexa built in,
right,
HDMI CEC control, it's kind of fascinating.
We are curious.
Yes, we shall see.
Amazon announced the Fire TV Cube sometime this morning. It's an Echo in a Fire TV set-top box.
This thing's crazy.
Yeah. So Echo's 4 years old. Fire TV is a bit older. Support for the usual suspects, Netflix, Hulu, PlayStation Vue, HBO Go, Sling, Amazon's Prime Video. The Alexa component works even with the television is off. It's got like the classic 8 mics built in, just like the Echo. You can do all the regular Alexa stuff. Fire TV can search for TVs or movies. There's third-party skills. It's a little cube, hence Fire TV Cube. Glass walls, IR blaster inside of the glass walls. Does CEC over HDMI, which I like a lot better than IR. CEC over HDMI is a big thing in my world.
In the home theater realm, generally, yeah. CEC is like the first thing you turn off on every TV because it just gets in the way of other crap. Oh. And the TV does something unexpected.
I just want my projector to turn on and off. And CEC does that particularly well. Although I sense if I don't pull the Kavo out of my home theater system because it's driving my wife insane for reasons I will discuss in another episode, I'm going to have to figure out a way to do a better job of getting the IR signal out into my living room than my current situation.
There are some good quality blasters on Monoprice you can have. And that's the thing I noticed right off the bat about the Cube. HDMI CEC plus a serious IR blaster built into this thing for control. So it's not just... So if CEC is not going to work, you have IR, and then IR... Most home theater devices have IR control.
Right.
So I think this would open it up in terms of being able to do even more with a wider variety of components, at least for the things you have that don't support CEC. So that to me is looking good. And this is kind of going straight after what Harmony's doing with their hub in terms of a product I really like and something I have linked to Amazon's AI products before for doing home theater control.
I'm laughing because there's an Alexa over your shoulder that we turned off so as not to activate the entire house. But, you know, in theory, right, if you get everything set up, and I say in theory because much like a Harmony remote, you do have to set everything up, and that takes time. But, you know, you can say, Alexa, watch TV. Sorry, everybody. And, you know, it will, you know, fire up your AVR and your television and dim your lights and everything else you have associated with that. Amazon says it's going to be more advanced than current Fire TV voice commands. So you could say Alexa, tune to ESPN, and it'll go to ESPN. Or you could say Alexa, go to channel, whatever your favorite channel is in your set-top box.
I've tried this on the Fire TV, and currently, if you do the ESPN request, it simply does the audio, like through TuneIn Radio.
Oh, funny.
It didn't actually launch the video app within the Fire TV.
Well, maybe you need to say, you know, Alexa... tune to, you know, NBC or CBS.
Because currently, and it's also the same for Netflix. Generally, if you say, hey, play something on Netflix, it will do like a generic search and provide you one-click access to that content. So, but you still have to pick up the remote and actually hit the button. It won't play it. However, when you do it, a show that you know is through Amazon Video Streaming Services, it will go to it and start playing it. So they clearly optimize it fully for their own stuff. But I don't know if that's up to the individual app makers for that platform to make those hooks available or not, but that's just something to keep in mind.
Guess what?
The Amazon AI works best with Amazon services. Go figure.
Shocking. Comcast, Dish, DirecTV all supported the set-top boxes. Amazon says 90% of households with cable and satellite service will be able to happily. Well, they didn't say happily.
That sounds like an IR claim.
With the Fire TV.
I'll be curious to see how much CEC control we'll see out of cable and set-top boxes. One thing about CEC that is nice, it generally seems a lot faster to actuate something when you do a voice command if it's CEC enabled rather than it blasting out an IR command or realizing what you want to do. It blasts out the IR command and you kind of got to wait for it to sort of all do its thing. CEC, it feels more direct when it works. So it's kind of interesting that it has both. Go either way. Plus the AI of Amazon. And still, there is no YouTube app on Amazon's products. Oh, but there is a link to YouTube.com through the Firefox browser or what. Strangle myself there.
We had a question a while back. And somebody's like, why is it so hard to search for stuff across different services? And part of it's because, you know, Google and Apple and Amazon are all in this giant pissing contest over trying to control, you know, the living room and your content. And, you know, and this is basically, it just sucks to be the consumer in this situation unless you are cheerfully locked into an ecosystem. The YouTube app is, a lot of people watch YouTube. A lot of people watch YouTube in the living room.
I think YouTube doubles in viewers every year. Just the number of people watching the content on YouTube. It's a growing platform. I love the variety. However, I could go off on a rant and complain a lot about how YouTube presents content
to you.
It's all
about carpool karaoke, man.
And finding... anyway, I could just... Finding the content you want to see.
Pre-orders now. Price is $89.99. Free shipping for Prime members.
Really?
Shipping on June 21st, 2018. Let us know what you think. Ask at avxl.com is the email.
Funny. If I don't sign into Amazon, it shows it as $120.
Really?
Join Prime to save $30 on this item.
Well, pardon me.
You know?
Yet another glorious reason to be a Prime member to get your Fire TV Cube at a significant discount.
Go figure.
Let us know what you think. Let us know what you're thinking about voice control in your living room. Let us know what you're using. Email us. Just say hi. We'd love to hear that you're out there. Ask at avxl.com. Tweet at Robert Herron. Tweet at Patrick Norton. Tweet at avxl. So you've been either calibrating or spent quality time with TCL 6 Series, Samsung's NU8000, and the Q6 FM.
Yeah.
What are you thinking this week.
All within the last couple of days. This has been a busy week for me. I did some calibration work for private clients, and I helped out the Washington Post with an upcoming article they're doing related to value HDR TVs.
And,
check you out. That was cool. It's somebody I worked with before, Jeffrey Fowler over at Washington Post, a terrific cat. And God, do they have nice offices, man. It's an absolute pleasure to go visit that office in San Francisco. It's just like, wow, man. Can I stay here? You have such a nice kitchen. And the mahogany. I forget. I was in an elevator that had wood paneling where it had a plaque to tell you where that wood came from, specifically from France somewhere. I don't remember. It was glorious looking. Anyway, yeah, all three of those TVs. Let's see. Let's start with the Q6 FN. That's Samsung's probably most affordable QLED TV that features quantum dot technology for improved color saturation. And we had it side by side with a TCL 6 series. I got to tell you, quantum dot enabled TVs in side by side comparisons do produce noticeably more saturated, richer colors compared to those non-quantum dot LCDs out there. In particular, the green is usually richer and closer to that P3 spec in terms of what Hollywood does when they do video production. They have a color palette that's a pretty wide, nice color palette they've been working with for a long time called DCI P3. And the Q6 FN with its quantum dot tech did a really good job of representing those colors when you're looking at your HDR streaming content or ultra high def Blu-ray discs and things like that. In particular, it's things like foliage and like turquoise waters of a Caribbean ocean. Those are the things that really jump out on in terms of differences between a TV with quantum dot and without currently. The TVs, when I say they don't have quantum dot, what they are using though, in the case of like the TCL 6 series, is enhanced LEDs that basically offer richer reds. And we're talking a few percentage points difference between the color coverage of quantum dot versus not, at least in the current TV lineups. However, that slight percentage difference is visible. However, unless you had these TVs side by side, I doubt you would notice the difference. And besides that, I will say the Q6 FN, no problem there. However, that TCL 6 series has full array local dimming compared to the Q6 FN, which is edge lit. That 6 series from TCL also pushed more than 1,000 nits out the front of that screen, which was pretty impressive. Subjectively, I didn't actually measure this to see what the cutoffs were, but viewing angles, I would give a nod to the Q6 FN from Samsung for having a more consistent picture when you get off to the sides a little bit. the TCL 6 series, that 1,000 nits drops off pretty quick when you move a couple seats over. So that's just something to keep in mind. However, it does have full array local dimming, and that really does help improve contrast, particularly off-axis, where...
I'm laughing because it's like, to get the optimal HDR experience with this television, move it far away from your seated position and snuggle with the people watching.
Sit in the middle. Oh, any LCD. Just about any premium LCD, especially the HDR ones, they're all going to look the best when you're sitting front and center. And what else? The Samsung NU8000. There's a non-QD TV as well. It is a step below, you could say, their QLED lineup. In the case of the NU8000, they have screen sizes going all the way up to 82 inches, which is great for a value set that you're looking for. I measured this right out of the box. A customer had one in their home. They had literally had set up earlier this week, and it measured pretty damn good. Right out of the box. And I'm absolutely loving the voice remote control that's included with these 2018 Samsung TVs. In particular, it makes it super simple to switch between picture presets like game mode or movie mode or standard mode. So if I set up a TV to do really calibrated, beautiful picture quality with its movie mode, but that only really looks good at night, and you want to be able to easily switch to, say, a standard preset that I have set with a light Canon mode with a little extra color and punch for when there's some room light to deal with, having that remote just to be able to hit the button, say, movie mode or standard mode or game mode, boom. It's really, really well done that way. Samsung's also pushing on their 2018 TVs, I believe, with both the NU series and the QLED series, a game mode that will automatically kick on and off with supporting consoles, and particularly the Xbox. So if you are a good gamer and you like your HDR and your 4K and all that good stuff, take advantage of these Samsung TVs. Not only do they have very low lag in terms of their performance, but that ability to switch the game modes on and off automatically is just something that will not only improve your game experience, but it just reduces the hassle of day-to-day use. All of these TVs apparently are available right now. That TCL 6 series is like listing for $650. And that has Dolby Vision, HDR10 support built in. Sure, it's a couple percentage points in terms of color coverage behind the best quantum dot TVs. But that full array local dimming, especially off-axis. When you get off-axis on an edge-lit TV that's doing some kind of local dimming, you quickly notice the backlight glare. It kicks up quite a bit. Your general degradation of picture quality with all of these LCDs is just something to keep in mind. Compared to, say, like an OLED or a projector on a screen.
Yeah, but what's the least expensive OLED from LG right now?
Yeah.
Versus literally the $650 for the TCL.
For the TCL. And if you shopped carefully, you could have probably scored the 55-inch B7 from last year from LG for about $1,200. So.
Oh, my goodness. There is, if you are looking for a bargain television, there is a sale going on at Vizio.com/dad. If you are desperately searching for an 80-inch HDR display, this may be the sale of the century for you, because their E-Series 80 inches is $800 off, which makes me wonder if there's just a warehouse full of those sitting somewhere. Most of the discounts on the monitors are somewhere in the $50
range. That's their E-Series.
Yeah. I also want to remind everybody to always check the price on Amazon, or if you are a Costco member, what the price is on Costco, just to make sure that that deal is actually a pretty good deal. And for example, that crazy 80-inch 4K HDR E-Series monitor, which I want to say is the 2017 series, that sells for like $2,800 on Amazon regularly. So this actually puts it below the Amazon price, but something to keep an eye out for. And they're also, I believe, running some sales on their soundbars too.
So it looks like Vizio has all of their 2018 TVs available except for that P-Series Quantum. That'll be coming out soon, hopefully. That's what I'm waiting for. Yeah, if you want the Quantum Color performance from Vizio, you got to wait a little bit longer. But you know what? Some people I've noticed who really prefer to buy the TV in the box themselves and bring it home rather than have it delivered. I'm not one of those people, but that's another good reason to check out stores like Costco, just to say, hey, you can not only look at this TV, but then here is an unopened box sitting right in front of you that you can just put right on the cart and drag out to your car, and boom, done.
Well, I will say, keep an eye out, because you know, thinking of Vizio again, you know, like Wirecutter just picked them, you know, for the best soundbar with a subwoofer. You're talking at $250 for, you know, a left, center, right channel soundbar, two surround sound speakers, a discrete subwoofer. So you got full 5.1. You know, it's like $250. And you can get a pretty excellent and fairly easy to set up audio experience. If you've been living with the speakers in your television, do dad a solid. Do yourself a solid. Screw dad.
Seriously. If maybe a new TV is not in the budget, check out an affordable soundbar. Just to, that'll make a world of difference compared to any of these thin, flat TVs with weak, weak sound quality.
Oh, my goodness. Oh. The smaller, the thinner they get, the worse the audio gets.
The most annoying thing.
A couple years later than we expected, I want to say we first heard about this back in 2016, Lenovo had a new multimedia controller, you know, a little tiny handheld keyboard to use for your home theater PC, you know, or your computer or for presentations. You know, we still screw around with home theater PCs, so this, you know, any kind of keyboard that is more living room friendly is always a plus. Because this one's interesting. It's like 80 physical keys, 6 media function keys, comes with its own 2.4 gigahertz USB dongle. Is kind of the size of, you know, smaller than my hand, very discreet kind of thumb typing keyboard. The whole keyboard itself doubles as a multi-touch capacitive touchpad.
Oh,
so
that's
cool.
You can
type on it, you can swipe on it.
So it does have clicky keys and no sign of a way to do like, oh, I'm trying to get it out of its container here.
Yeah.
Well, so this whole surface then for the keypad becomes a touchpad. That's nice.
It's not just a keyboard, it's a touchpad.
Oh, it's got mouse buttons and everything.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It's got its own 2.4 gigahertz USB dongle. Lenovo says it's got 65 feet, 20 meters of wireless range, and 8 months of battery life off of a pair of AA batteries.
Nice hardware on-off switch, and this is about perfect size for thumb typing.
Yeah.
So, digging that.
It feels good in the hand. MSRP is $55. It's selling for just under $45 online. I'm going to fire that up at home.
I was thinking I wanted something in Bluetooth, but with the USB dongle, pretty much every TV I look at that has USB support built in has USB device support built in for mouse and keyboards. So that would probably work just fine with the majority of those TVs out there.
Oh, my goodness.
Digging it.
There's a question I've been nosing around from Art in Tampa, and I'm going to oversimplify this, but first I'm going to read Art's letter and his electronic mail. Having a flashback to Ragnarok right now. Art writes, "Hi guys, love the show, look forward to enjoying each new episode, been following you guys for years in previous incarnations as well, love your insights and info." Thank you, Art. "I was sad to hear about Oppo exiting the DVD player business. I own both a BDP-83 and BDP-103 and was induced to purchase a UDP-203 after this news. They make such great products, and I love the Universal Player feature as well. I was fortunate to buy one at list price directly from Oppo and receive it in 1 week. There was a card in the box offering a free native DSD sampler download. I think you may have mentioned DSD recordings along the way, but I confess I probably wasn't listening closely. I have the same problem. From what I can tell, I should be able to play this sampler through a USB input on the UDP-203. I'm working on it. My question to you guys is, could you do a piece in a future episode discussing DSD audio and how one can listen to it? I perused the native DSD website, which has an enormous amount of info, including a fine list of devices to listen ranging to the thousands of dollars. I'm still trying to wrap my head around this new universe. Would love to hear your thoughts. Thanks for all the great work. Art in Tampa." And for my own amusement, I'm going to say DSD MQA MOUSE. In the universe of audio, the vast majority of the stuff we listen to is, you know, pretty common and all based on PCM audio. And, you know, DSD, I mean, the TLDR here is DSD is one of the audio formats some folks claim is the bestest and you should use it.
Sure.
And DSD is particularly interesting because, you know, CD came out and then Sony and Philips decided they wanted to do the replacement for the CD. There was Super Audio CD. And the idea they would have higher resolution content on SACD discs, and that content was encoded in DSD. SACD is out there. People love the way SACD sounds. I think Cambridge Audio has one of the best explainers on DSD I've seen because they're pretty agnostic about it. You know, they refer to it as a specialist format. And so people have been securing DSD files through various means, using them in you know, a lot of forum entries where it's like, oh, DSD audio is a superior audio experience. And it may well be. But the biggest issue with DSD audio is that there's simply not a lot of content available in it.
Gotcha.
And there's a lot of obscure aspects to the playback. And DSD is not something you can unpack natively in most digital analog converters, period. And it's the same issue with MQA. And, you know, MQA like DSD, you have to find some place that has it. For example, the easiest place to get MQA is if you have the top tier subscription on Tidal, and then you find the MQA content encoded in there, you play it back, and in theory, you go, wow, this sounds so much better than the regular lossless audio on Tidal. DSD 64, that's a sample rate, a rough equivalent sample rate of like 2488.2 kilohertz, DSD 128. You know, it's really crazy because they essentially take a single bit of information, they sample it for DSD 128 5.6 million times a second, and that essentially means it's equivalent to, you know, 24/176.2 kilohertz audio. It's a different way of doing the sample rate. A lot of people think DSD audio sounds.
It sounds like an archive format where if I were producing music professionally, I would want that because I don't know what format I'll be dumping it off to later on down the road.
That was a big thing where they were going through and deciding to digitize, you know, the record companies were deciding to, I want to say Sony primarily, and feel free to email ask@techthing.com if you
disagree
violently. ask@avxl.com. It has been a long week, and I apologize. But essentially, it was designed to be a digital mastering format. And, you know, and it was also showed up in SACD. So
we've had some talks about CD audio quality in terms of that format. And granted, there are, you know, quantization errors and other things in any format there is. However, CD is good enough to fool the human hearing system.
Yeah. Mathematically,
it should sound identical to any other format as long as it was produced adequately. For me, it goes back to like archiving, and God, I'm not creating multiple formats, or at least I'm taking CD, and if anything, I'm dumbing it down to something like MP3 or even OGG, where I'm taking something away from it, but still trying to retain the essence of it.
Yeah, well,
or
I mean,
where I use FLAC, and hopefully it's no different than the CD original CD track. So
I'll be honest with you: once you get up above 256, 300 kilobit per second, even MP3 sounds pretty good. I do FLAC because I want all of the audio information that
storage
was contained
on
the CD. DSD is fascinating because literally, instead of using lots of bits of information to create the audio signal, it uses that single bit. It samples millions of times per second. But essentially, it's a different way of creating a high-resolution audio signal. And the problem with high-resolution audio signals is that, in theory, mathematically, and people who are better at math than we are can walk you through, you don't really need it. Some people say that I obviously can't hear it because I suck, and that's fine. But I think there's a lot of there's a lot of magic inside a standard CD audio.
Without a doubt.
If you are a classical enthusiast, there are some advantages to DSD that have almost nothing to do with the encoding. But because, you know, there are specialty shops where they are basically doing the very best. You know, I'll quote Cambridge Audio: studios that master music and DSD specialize in high quality recordings of extremely good musicians. Because of this, DSD material includes some sensational music. And if you're a fan of classical music in particular, you'll find that some of the finest performances by orchestras and composers have been captured in DSD. And thanks to the care and effort that went into them, they sound fantastic even before any of the benefits of the format come into play. It's cool that you have something that can play DSD art. If there are, you know, composers or orchestras you're a particular fan of, or you find some music you like that's encoded in DSD, go for it. If you are buying new audio gear, I would not obsess over having DSD support unless you already know of a bunch of DSD recordings that you are desperate to play, because the vast majority of the music I listen to is never going to show up in DSD.
Right.
The vast majority of the music I listen to is never going to show up in MQA.
It kind of just goes back to me. It's like, look, I don't need something that exceeds my capabilities for hearing and most people's.
Yeah.
So audio CDs are fan-freaking-tastic.
Yeah.
However, I see a need for formats like DSD for things like archiving, or I am Sony and I am creating the content in a studio, and it's like, okay, the master track, say, or the master recording, what format do you want to keep that in? Sure, it's like, give me something that gives me, you know, millions of samples per second and things like that. And for that, I see a need for it, just because it's like when I was following a sci-fi producer's commentary the other day about older TV shows.
Right.
And he was like, oh, you know, the last thing they did before that show got canceled is they would take all our content and actually copy it out to film stock and then say that, because they knew that film stock was the best version of it. And then later on down the road, if they wanted to, you know, we'll scan that at 2K or 4K or 8K and do an HDR conversion, they had their archive done in a format that far exceeded what the original content was edited in. So it was just in terms of a storage mechanism to retain every bit of it in essence and quality. Sure. I think that's where it becomes critical. But I think for the average person, it's like, start with Spotify's high quality streaming first.
Yeah.
And if you can't hear the difference between Spotify and a CD,
yeah,
you know, then save your money.
I like to buy CDs because, you know, there have been cases where, you know, tracks I particularly love, artists I particularly love, because of contractual deals, have disappeared from that streaming service. You know,
oh, that's true too.
A lot of stuff I would like to be able to play is not available on Tidal, which irritates the snot out of me. But if I own the CDs and I rip the CDs, I have that data always. You know, maybe only at home, and I might have to, you know, remotely log into the
See
the
for
NAS.
Me on the video side, it's easier to point to something like a UHD Blu-ray compared, you know, 100 megabit streaming versus off the disk locally compared to, say, you know, a 15 megabit stream from Netflix and in the quote unquote same format. So, you know, both are still going to look really good, but in certain circumstances, it's nice to have like a higher bit rate or something tangible that I can really point to. In terms of audio, I am less familiar with the technologies, but from the limited learnings I've given myself, CD audio is hard to beat. and it should exceed the capabilities of most human beings walking this planet right now. So
yeah, and you know, there are a lot of places, and it's literally, you know, I look at
authored properly.
Yes, authored properly, and that's a big deal. We've talked about, for example, overcompression on CDs and how CDs being quote modernized unquote or quote remastered unquote. Well, they were remastered. There's no quotes there. They were just remastered so that they will continue to be played on FM radio with all of the other unfortunately compressed music with no dynamic range. You know, depending on, you know, which CD you can get a radically different experience because of the choices made by the mastering engineer. And which is unfortunate, because some of those masters, while they may be necessary, for example, to keep Rage Against the Machine playing on FM radio, kind of destroy the dynamics and a lot of the quality of the music. And there are albums that are, you know, much more broadly beloved than Rage Against the Machine. You know, there were cases where some of the early high-resolution audio tracks that were being sold online were, 16-bit, 44K, or were sourced in some cases and upscaled from, you know, basically the CD audio to a, quote, high-resolution audio format, which is not how it works or should be done.
I find it just simply nice that this person has a great universal disc player that happens to add in support for this quote unquote native DSD.
Yeah.
And that's terrific.
Yeah. You need DSD content. You need a player that can recognize it. You need a DAC that can convert it. I won't get too deep down that rabbit hole, but you know, Art, you have a fantastic piece of hardware there. Grab the DSD audio, play it, you know, A-B it against some of your, you know, if you can even find the same, and that's the other big thing, like MQA, trying to A-B MQA audio, which for me primarily comes from Tidal versus a non-MQA encoded track, which for me is probably going to come from a CD, is a wicked ripping pain in the ass and almost impossible to do in any meaningful way, because you can't sort of, you know, start two tracks at the same time and A-B flip them in any way I've been able to figure out that I could do. But, you know, try it. If you like it, if there's music there that you like, that's a reason to pursue it. If you think they sound better or the performances are amazing, go for it. Have fun. But for the vast majority of people out there, you know, start by looking at the DSD titles. And if they don't excite you, I wouldn't pursue the DSD rat hole. And I'd also, you know, watch out, because there's a lot of high-end audio gear that is, you know, fantastic and beautiful and wondrous, but there's not a whole lot of people who really need an $8,000 DAC or an $8,000 streamer.
Totally.
Or maybe you do, in which case, if you've got the money, by all means, enjoy it. But I am often shocked at the price tags that come with some audio gear that does roughly the exact same thing as an AudioQuest Dragonfly plugged into a Raspberry Pi board running free software.
See, for me, too, it's also the services and everything associated with what makes it easier for an individual to enjoy the particular content they're looking for. And on the video side, it's like, hey, look, if you could save some money on a particular, you know, visual experience, and that would allow you then to subscribe to, say, Netflix or Amazon's 4K UHD service for a year or two, you know, I think that's a better option. Or on the audio side, hey, get a nice HD subscription to Spotify or Pandora One, right, or whatever your favorite flavor is, and make the content you like more accessible to you is just as important, I think, as, you know, going down the rabbit hole of a particular format, sure, beyond the CD format. So
absolutely. Oh my goodness. Next we're going to talk about when you need to actually run a preamp. I'm a Philistine in this area, but okay. We got a good question from Sir P. I'm obsessed with the Black Panther Blu-ray. It is so beautiful.
Oh, cool. I haven't seen it, and I'm waiting on the UHD Blu-ray. I'll have to go score that when it comes out.
Rewatching Goliath on Amazon Prime.
I'm doing my best not to buy $25 ultra-high-def Blu-ray discs at the drop of a hat. It's just, geez, I'm trying to be super selective, so I just don't go nuts.
Oh, man.
Had to get Gladiator, though. I've got that in the cart right now. And the new Matrix 4K in code. Oh, good golly.
Yeah, the video on the Black Panther Blu-ray, you know, we watched it streaming the first time. The stream wasn't bad, but again, it's always nice to have a less compressed and less influenced by the internet streaming.
Heck yeah.
High Def Digest was not particularly thrilled with the audio mix on that. They said it was satisfying, but because they set it up for, he calls it a near field home theater mix, you're going to have to turn it up louder to get sort of the same theater experience. Everything seemed to be across the front three channels and not doing as much. It's interesting.
I hate that. I see that a lot with TV programming, and that annoys me to no end, but I feel you. I keep thinking back to a client I had a few months ago with their Atmos setup in their home, and I want to hear everything through that setup. So that's another reason for me to really look at these discs. Oh, geez. What was the announcement also this week was Apple's with their iOS 12 or the tvOS 12 update brings Dolby Atmos along with Dolby Vision in a set-top streaming box.
Oh, wow.
So, and I think that's, I believe, the only one of its kind that does that. So for all of you Apple TV 4K owners, it's probably a good idea to hit that update button if it hasn't done it already. And especially if you have not only the Dolby Vision TV, but the Dolby Vision or the Dolby Atmos then home theater setup, you can take advantage of some good upgrades.
Forget what I said about not spending money. Just go buy all the things right now.
I'm telling you, man. I absolutely love my Roku Ultra. I think it's a lot of use. Although I find that sucker overheats. I can't stack it on anything.
Yeah.
It's kind of got to just hang in its own little space with nothing around it. Mine's prone to just cooking off.
I've been sort of imagineering how I'm going to suck the hot air. So all of my gear other than my screen and my projector are all in a closet that's off the side of the living room. And it is amazing how hot it gets in there just with the AVR running. And I'm in the process of figuring out how to create ventilation for that room that does not involve me doing something particularly
drywall
lacking in
drywall
aesthetics.
Saw.
No. there will be no drywall saw.
Actually, how big is the gap under the door? You can get a custom fitted.
I think
vent
I figured out
there.
A way to create sort of a tube that sucks the hot air from the top of the closet and expels it through the little gap underneath the door.
You have to do something, and yeah, and you have to leave room for air to come back in.
Well, it'll hit. You know, it's an old house. It's an uninsulated wall. You know, it'll be 10, 20 degrees colder than the rest of the house in the winter, and it heats up in the summer. You know, it'll be 85 degrees in there, you know, and the wall will be 40 degrees cooler.
don't make your electronics cry, man.
No, and it's you know,
you're aging them quicker.
I'm aging them quicker, and they do age. But the it's more like the rest of the components on the board that I fear for. And I too have felt the top of the Roku box and been like, this is toasty.
Mine gives me an on-screen message if I accident. Oh, I set it on top of an input box or something laying on the on the table, and it's like, I'm overheating. Please do something about this. And it gives me a link to Roku, just like, if for more information, go here. And I'm like, how about you just not overheat on me? And it's like,
well, I'm in the process
of these sealed units with no fans in them. And it's like, there you go.
One of the things I've been playing with is sort of mounting all of my smaller gear on pegboard that sort of hangs vertically on the wall. And then literally, you know, taking PC biscuit fans and blowing air across the surfaces, because it's amazing how hot some of this stuff gets.
I am so temperamental. But I still like it anyway.
Ventilation. It's not just for you. Oh, my goodness. If you're still listening, you're obviously a fan of AVXL, and we invite you to help support the show. Become a patron over at patreon.com/AVXL. That's AVEXCEL.
You can hit up that website and find our Patreon page.
We're going to be having a hangout this month.
Listen to past episodes.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, avxl.com is the website. You can get the RSS feed there, or just search on your favorite podcatching tool.
Really need to get going on our show notes. That's just...
I have thoughts on that. I have an idea.
We need an intern.
Oh, yes. We'll go to the local community college.
Ooh!
Would you like to be involved in the exciting world of media production?
I'm about to get out of here and go calibrate the very best non-laser projector that JVC makes. Ooh. And I'm kind of excited. It's a high-end model. Well, it's about 8,000 list. So this will be the second one in recent memory that I've done with real HDR support. And I have some new tools to go at it with, a new spec related to calibrating HDR projectors that the good folks at Portrait Displays and Calman have put together. And I have yet to see any documentation specifically about this new tool, so I am just going to wing it and go through it and see how well it works. I have the standard way I'll do it, and I'll try the new way and compare and contrast, so to speak. But those projectors are just – I love setting up projectors. They're complicated beasts in terms of, as a projector, you're dealing with a lot more than just pixels on a screen. You're dealing with everything from convergence to geometry to focus, the basics, before you even get started adjusting the picture quality. And it's a challenge, but at the same point, man, the contrast performance of a JVC projector is unmatched, really.
Yeah.
There isn't anybody doing a darker black level on a projector, a more contrasted looking picture. There are some really high-end Sony projectors that look really good too. I almost go back and forth between Sony and JVC in terms of who makes the best projector out there right now. It's hard. It's hard to tell, or hard to choose one over the other, but the thing that blew me away about these new JVC projectors for 2018 was how much better their DCI color coverage has jumped up.
Yeah.
They have dual filters built in for the lamp module. So when you kick in that DCI, and I've talked about this before, but when you kick in that DCI color format, say from an ultra-high-def Blu-ray disc, it physically switches the color filters, the bits of glass that filter the light.
That's pretty crazy.
To tighten them up so you get even more saturated points, and it makes a world of difference. And anyway, that'll be going to have a good time with that.
Next week, ladies and gentlemen.
Got my gear ready.
We're talking about preamps. Talking about the ELAC, the full surround sound setup I got running from the speakers that debut 2.0 speakers that ELAC set out. We'll talk a little bit more about subwoofer locations. And who knows what other mayhem may lurk.
Yeah, we got some great questions, too, rolling in.
Yeah,
folks looking for a good 4K HDMI cable. Do you need to even think about that? I think you do.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, you need to have the cable. Well, you know what? That's a discussion for next week.
Yes.
And if you are a DSD enthusiast who thinks I've completely got it wrong, I welcome you to email ask@avxl.com. With that, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening. I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Robert Herron.
We'll catch you next week on AVXL.